time to preface with two things. The first is it's so exciting to come here and you hear other people talk, and it's amazing and sort of changes the way you look at your work. But then when you're about to present your work, you want to change it. All of it. No, there's some things. So I'm excited about that. And I, the other thing is that I'm a quantitative researcher who learned qualitative research and has been involved in a few projects. But these two qualitative projects have been relatively new to me as a PI, and so I'm going to tell you that qualitative research is really hard, and there's a lot of information here, and so bear with me as I try to figure out a way to present these coherently. I feel a great responsibility to the women who told me their stories to tell them to you well and in detail and with meaning. And they're all different, and they all have similarities, and they all sound a lot like me and the people that I know and the women that I know. And so I'm really trying to honor that in talking about these qualitative results. So that's a big issue for me. So I'm talking about healthcare needs of women who are leaving incarceration of one kind, usually jail, and we'll talk about that. These are some co-investigators, Dr. Kathy Sekula, Dr. Susan Cohen, Dr. Rick Zuha, who's a qualitative expert who had to deal with me, and Dr. Tammy Hughes. I have nothing to disclose. I have lots to disclose, but nothing related to that. This work is funded by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the Nurse Faculty Scholars Program, which I'm very proud to be a part of. And as I said, this work wouldn't be, of course, possible without the stories and trust of the women, but also the social service organizations that are serving women and their desire to help improve the lives of women. So there's a lot of stats that are available and a lot of stats that are not available about the population that we're talking about. The number of women in prison is increasing. I'm sure you've heard this. This is the increasing rate. This is who, you know, these are the rates that are increasing exponentially, and some would say. But what that means is very hard to tease out, and who's going where and what's happening and what are they going in for. It gets quite complicated. What we do know is that women go into jail with very complicated histories, especially related to violence and trauma and mental health and previous incarcerations and other health problems. We also know this Binswanger and colleagues who did they're the ones who did the amazing research that talks about the 13 times increase in morbidity 2 weeks after. They've also done some new research that says that by virtue of gender alone, women in the prison have significantly higher rates of medical and psychiatric conditions and drug dependence, and that's after adjusting for sociodemographic factors. That's by virtue of gender alone, which is a really important thing to consider and something we have to think about when we think about interventions and when we talk about what it means to provide gender-specific services and the importance of those kinds of things. We know that recidivism rates can be reduced if women receive adequate support. I say that with fear and trepidation. The goal of my research is not related to recidivism. The goal of my research is related to quality of life in women and their own search for that. But it's important because going to jail does not improve your quality of life in any way either, and so that's how we think about it. We all know that self-management is critical to reduce risk. We know that getting people engaged in the system, engaged in their own healthcare, and engaged in their own lives are the ways to change outcomes. Very little is being done to address the healthcare needs of women at this time, and especially those leaving jail. And I'll tell you a little bit about the setting that I'm in and what makes it a little bit different. So one of the things I am now going to always say in my presentations after a result of being here, and I know this is true, I talk about maximizing the opportunity of incarceration and what it means to help women at this stage. It's also incredibly important to say that jail is bad for your health. And going to jail alone is bad for your health. So while we are going to maximize the opportunity at this time, broader efforts have to be about not putting in people in jail in the first place. And that's much more important. And I'm, from now on, always going to say that. I'm going to make a really nice slide, but I don't know what it's going to say. But I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it more often. So what I have here are two different studies, the results that we looked at together, because as I'm learning, qualitative inquiry produces more questions than it answers. And so when I first started trying to figure out what to do with this population, my questions were, what are their needs, and oh my gosh, are they at all going to be interested? Or are they going to be leaving jail and saying, I don't want to talk to you about my health, I have to get a job, I got to get my kids back, I got to deal with these things. So my questions were, what do you need, and would you be willing to get some help from me at that time, from nurses in general at that time? So we did that study, and I'll give you a little bit of the results about that. In general, the needs are everything you can possibly imagine, and yes, yes, oh my gosh, yes, we want help at this time. We're interested in it. It's a priority. So from there, the question that I thought, okay, well, so we want to do something. So what does it mean to be healthy as you're leaving jail? What are the expectations? What do you envision as your goals about being healthy? What does self-care look like for you? What do you want to your lives to look like when I talk about being healthy, when you talk about being healthy? So what are your goals and how do you define things? And then as somebody living this experience, what are some potential strategies for reaching you and the women like you, and staying connected? Because as Lori reported, this is a really hard time to stay connected with women. And I've worked on the inside, and no matter, you make great connections with women on the inside, and even as they're leaving, and then they leave, and then you lose contact with them for a variety of reasons, because of what you represent, because of changes in priorities. How do we make that connection in a meaningful way, not tied to punitive measures or your probation or parole? How do we make a meaningful healthcare connection in that way? So that's what we're going to do. Simple enough, right? So we were looking at women 18 years of age and older. I'm in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, so English speaking was not an issue. I've lived in Los Angeles and Austin, and it would have been a different issue where I've worked and done research in the past. We by default limited to English, frankly. I wouldn't have limited to it if it came up. It wasn't really ultimately an exclusion criteria. We just didn't make the consent forms in other languages because we don't serve women in Pittsburgh that many in the jail. They were recruited at social service agencies and transitional housing and community corrections programs for women who were recently incarcerated. Most had been in jail recently. All of them are living in, and I'll give you some sample demographics, all were living in community corrections facilities. So either they were on work release, they were in programs in some way. Some of them were in mandatory treatment in a community corrections facility. All were pretty much considered inmates still. And we were able to pay participants $15 for the interview, which is important and significant. All IRB approved. When I talk about setting, I'm going to take 2 minutes to tell you what's going on here. So women in the jail, the pattern is, and there are statistics on this, I'll tell you sort of, I mean, the Department of Justice has statistics, none of them really tell you the story. So women go into jail, they don't stay very long, they get out fairly quickly. They are on probation for a long time. They violate and go back. The women that I'm talking about are women who are going in and out and in and out because they are not able to meet the terms of their probation or parole, either related to drug use or checking in with their probation officer. Usually both. They're not checking in, so they get drug tested. This is a very fluid process, this probation and parole thing. So whether or not you get sent back is, you just never know if you're for a violation, what violation is going to get you sent back. You never know how long you're going to be in jail. Judges have an immense amount of leeway in how that works. So the women that I see in the jail, and I also teach the prenatal class, they'll come and we'll walk in and say, I'm getting out tomorrow. My judge just wants to hear this and the other thing, and I see them through their whole pregnancy. Others will say, I'm doing 6 months, I have this, and then the jail reaches a certain census and they're gone the next week into a program. So we don't have a really good handle on what happens with these women. What I do know is that most of the women I see are never there on new charges. They're there on probation violations, which is, in my personal opinion, sometimes a way that we deal with new charges is we pull you in on your probation violation. You do additional time on that for anything new you might have done. When I, you watch Lindsay Lohan on the news. I don't know if you do. I do. I also watch Kim Kardashian, who's getting a divorce. But it's all very disconcerting to me. I worry about, I watch Lindsay Lohan, who can't meet the requirements of her probation, And that's a reality. Probation is a really hard thing. And can you imagine, you have all those resources available to you and you can't get to the morgue. Okay, I know way more about this than I should. Okay, I admit that. But you can't get to the morgue on time at 8 a.m. You know, you have a car. Like, someone comes to your house and picks you up. Imagine if you don't have any of that. You know, you don't have anybody to take care of your kids, and you have to be at community service. You have to be these particular places. It's very, very complicated. Okay, so these are focused ethnographies. So we're talking about, if you're not familiar with it, this is a nursing-based ethnography. We're looking at the story in a very particular place as it relates to healthcare. And there are four phases of analysis. I'd be happy to talk about it. I like it. I think it's intuitive process, but it's rigorous as well. It allows you to really get into the data and look at it from several different perspectives, but it's really embedded in nursing, which I love and think is really important in the things that nursing can do. So this is the sample. As I said, these are two different studies, and the first study had 11 women in it. It was part of a mixed method study, and the second had 28 women. So these are in-depth interviews. Women are around, from both of them, they're very similar samples, around 40 years old. We have a very highly educated population at the jail in Pittsburgh, which has been interesting in a lot of different ways. In that first study with 30 women, the mixed method study, I gave the health literacy test because I thought, oh, here we have an issue. Not one of them didn't pass with flying colors. So we didn't have a literacy issue, needless to say. Vast majority have children, an average of around 2.5 up to 3. These number of incarceration, so I also asked this question, so can you tell me how many times you've been in jail? So, I've worked for a long time in the corrections, and I didn't think that was a stupid question. Turns out that's a terribly stupid question, and it really complicated. So those results, are kind of somebody saying, well, there was a time here, and here's this other time. And so those are, that data is highly suspect, as it were. It's a lot. It's more than anybody should be in jail, is sort of the answer on that. The vast majority reported having health problems. As you can see, 11 out of 11, 24 out of 28. Number of health problems up to almost 3.5 per person. Those are diagnosed health problems. The majority on medications, average around 3. Also quite important. Most of them have health insurance. Which is great, and what happens is that you have 90 days of health insurance. This is an extremely regional conversation about how long you have health insurance and what that looks like. So the women that I'm working with, for 90 days, they have health insurance. If you've been in the system for a long time, you use that 90 days very well. You go to the dentist, you go to the doctor, you get your prescriptions, you get your prescriptions again, and you figure out a way to do that, and then you get dropped from the public assistance program after that because you're required to get a job. As part of your probation or parole or work release program, and the minute you get a job, you lose all of your benefits. Not surprising, substance abuse history and mental health diagnosis also quite high in this particular sample. So in general, when we start talking about the qualitative results, those first questions about what are your concerns, they were quite easy to categorize. This was not the difficult piece for me. People talked about the same thing and exactly what you would expect and the way that you would answer this question if I were to ask you, what are your healthcare concerns now for you, right? You have your concerns about diagnoses that you have, your access to resources through your insurance, your medications, what you can get, not really understanding what you have access to and what you don't have access to. Mental health issues, health maintenance. In all of the women I spoke with in both studies, everybody would like to lose 10 pounds. And everybody would like to eat better. And all of the health maintenance. Everybody would like to have a little bit more time for some meditation or figure out how to make that work for them. It's just the same conversation. It could have been, Self magazine telling you, the issues that are going on. These women have the same concerns as I do in almost every way. One of the things that comes up obviously more frequently is discussions about health within the context of recovery from drug and alcohol addiction. Because many of them have been in the system and have been in treatment, they are able to use that language quite well about finding providers, about what it means to be have addiction within recovery. And we'll talk more about that in the second study. Barriers, also what you would expect. Lack of resources, despite having health insurance, the financial resources to pay co-pays, to do the things that you want to do are quite limiting. And there's also this idea of social capital as lack of resources, which are very complicated. There are all sorts of systematic barriers. This is my favorite example. We eat breakfast at 6, we eat lunch at 10, and supper at 3:45. And then we have vending machines with chips and soda. It's very hard to talk about. You know, I mean, this is an environment we're talking about that doesn't promote health necessarily in the ways that we would expect or want. So this is when we start talking about the second phase, where I went and said, okay, well, tell me what it means to be healthy. And this is my first qualitative, figure. So I want to talk a little bit about these results. At the core of this, and I'll give you some examples, is a very real optimism and desire to be healthy in every single woman that I spoke with. Realistic? Not necessarily. As you would expect when people talk about health promotion, both in terms of I'd like to lose 50 pounds before Thanksgiving because I really think that's important and going to change my life. But also a lot of talk about this is my last chance to be healthy. I feel good after not feeling good for a long time. I'm going to take advantage of this opportunity. I'm afraid I'm not going to have any more chances. But a very real desire to be healthy. And around that you have some of the issues obviously that came up again about mental and physical health issues, health promotion, well-being, addiction. This issue about relationships is incredibly important. And I could talk for 6 hours about relationships, but we are talking about relationships with healthcare providers and with family and social service providers and the difficulties of those. So to give you a couple of examples, mental and physical health issues, you just have all of these things happening. They're switching, the women are moving around facilities, they're getting all sorts of things. The last time I got to Cambridge, they put me on all kinds of psych meds, and then Harrisburg made it mandatory for me to be on those psych meds in order to be on parole. As soon as I started working, medical stopped paying. They wanted that money to come in my pocket. But she's got to be on those medications because parole says she has to be on those medications. And so what's she supposed to do, right? Those are some mental and physical health issues that have to do with the system itself. The optimism I talked about, I need to be fit for my children, I feel the healthiest I have right now. A lot of people talked about the realities about I probably would be dead if I hadn't been in jail. But that's, not the end of it, because when we talk about relationships, what you see is they also don't feel like anybody cared for them. So it's a really complicated dance. And that's what relationships is about. I cringe when I see this first quote. I'm sorry that it says the word retarded in it. There it is. When we talk about relationships with healthcare providers, there is this thing about, in my community, it's bipolar as the diagnosis of the day, so everybody has bipolar. And the women are really on to that, and so it no longer has any meaning or resonance in the community, and it's really hard for people to understand. So they feel like they're not being listened to as individuals, but they want real relationships, real trusting relationships with healthcare providers, and if they have them, it means a lot to them. Health promotion well-being is exactly what you think it is and exactly what it says every day in the New York Times and every day in every magazine about what it is. And the women that I spoke with know a lot about health promotion and well-being. They know a lot about what they're not doing, what they'd like to be doing, what they think makes them feel better. Addiction, as I talked about before, they really are able to talk about this language. When you ask them what is healthy living, anybody who is actually in recovery in a cognizant way is saying that's about not using. Healthy for me is not using, first and foremost. So when you start to think about it within the confines of the criminal justice system, I'm self-medicating, or I would, I'd have doctor's appointments, so I'd start using, and then I'd go into the doctor and they'd say, what's wrong with you? And I'd say, oh, nothing's wrong with me, because they don't have the trust in those relationships. So what we have here, and you've seen the green space, which is the criminal justice system, is expanding. So over all of these healthcare issues is the system that exists for them. They're still inmates, but keeping in mind they've been on probation and parole probably for years and will be for years now. They're constantly reporting in. They're trying to live in these environments. So the criminal justice system kind of encircles all that they do, right? I mean, that's sort of present for them. And they are butting up against it all the time, right? So when you think about your desire to lose 15 pounds, and everybody is just getting in your way and giving you candy, it's happening to me, and people want to talk to me on the phone, so I cannot go to the gym. We all have those things that happen. Imagine when those things that are preventing you are things like, I'm locked down 28 days now, coming to this new facility. I cannot leave this building for 28 days. And then to talk about exercise. The confines of the system really make it hard for people to think about how to exercise when you're locked down for 28 days. We're all looking for excuses and reasons, and the criminal justice system becomes part of that. When you don't take your medications, if you're in a facility that that you come in on medications in community corrections and you choose not to take them because it's not a nurse or a doctor giving them to you, or a physician giving them to you, you are, that's a disciplinary action. You choose not to take your medications, you'll go back to jail, right? So, you know, when you're trying to manage your health, those kinds of things get in the way. The criminal justice system is always there. So what happens is your stress and anxiety just starts to bear down on you, right? I mean, so the criminal justice system is there, you're butting up against it, those issues are happening, the stress and anxiety goes up as a result, and you can just feel it when that's happening. Try not to be too excited about my animation because it's thrilling, I'm going to tell you right now. So the system just starts to come in on you, right? I mean, all of these things starts to collapse. It's your reason for not taking care of your health, the reason that things aren't going the way you're supposed to be. It's a really tangible way to talk about not being successful, and it makes it very complicated and difficult. And what happens? Your optimism dies. Your desire to be healthy goes away. Those things start to happen. And women turn to things that have worked for them in the past in order to deal with their stress and anxiety, drugs, alcohol, bad relationships, those sorts of issues. So what does it mean? There are significant health issues that need to be addressed. At the core of all of this is a fundamental desire to be healthier, and for many of them, some very real optimism. And people ask all the time, is it realistic? My question in response to that is, does that matter? You know, probably optimism in and of itself is something that we want to look at and be happy about and celebrate. Having realistic plans is important, and that's where nursing comes in. Turning that optimism into action is what we need to be responsible for, not questioning the optimism or the motivation of the optimism or the realistic piece of the optimism. We need to make that action plan. Individual healthcare needs are very similar to women in the general population. I'm just going to say that. You hear the same stuff. You can talk about the same stuff all the time. But the criminal justice system envelops all activities and plans for these women. It's a threat. It's a reason not to be successful in certain ways. It's a constant presence. Women are very open to intervention, especially from nurses. I'll say we ask them about, you know, who are your support systems? Not one person mentioned nurses. Then you say, oh, what about a nurse? I love nurses. Nurses are the greatest. I trust nurses. Nurses. It's a wonderful opportunity for nurses. There are all sorts of limitations of this study. It used to have a sample size thing on that, but that's a quantitative researcher saying sample size is not a limitation. This is a regional problem. So, you know, there are going to be issues. Things are going to be different no matter who you speak with. But these are women who are accessing services at some level. They are involved in programs in certain ways. We have a higher average age than the incarcerated population. We are talking about women who have been in the system for a while, and that's who I'm really interested in talking with. You know, younger women have very different needs, and we need to get them out at 20 and never coming back. It's a different thing than the women who are dealing with chronic diseases and multiple children and different pressures. There are differences in the setting when women are released from jail, no matter where that happens to be. Unique needs are related to individual and systematic characteristics. Basically, that just means there's no one solution to this problem. It's huge, but there's a lot of things that we can do. We need to address stress appraisal and response. Women use the stress language quite readily. That feels very acceptable to them to talk about stress and their response to stress. And interventions that we want to design have to be about transcending that envelope of the criminal justice system. So you need to have successes where you are able to manage your health while you're still part of the system, while you're still on probation, while you're still in community corrections, that you're able to reach your goals beyond that. The criminal justice system will not have that control over your life. The criminal justice system, the people in it, the mistakes of your past will not predict your future. We can help you be successful. We can help you make and realize goals that are meaningful to you outside the definition of the system in that particular way. There it is, transcending. There we are, all transcending and stuff, the criminal justice system. That's it.